small rainbows and a nice cutthroat, a fish that gets its name from orange gash-like markings below the gills. In the treetops, we count several more ospreys and hawks, but no bald eagles. Lil points to a pale rock bluff where she spotted a golden a few days ago, but the bird isn't there now. She rows effortlessly, even in the swift water. One careless stroke and the boat could crash against a boulder and flip. The stretch of the river leading to the takeout is flat and slower, so Summer asks for a turn on the oars. She aims the bow toward a bare notch on the shore and beaches the boat perfectly. Lil's explorer is already parked at the ramp, thanks to a shuttle service that the trout guides use. Summer and I steady the boat in the current while Lil backs the trailer down the slope. I get the feeling she can do this with her eyes closed. On the drive back to Livingston, we pass a herd of pronghorn antelopes standing in a field watching the cars on the interstate. This blows me away. Summer says the pronghorns always disappear before the first day of hunting season. They've got a survival calendar in their brain, she adds, tapping her head. Same goes for the elk and deer. When we arrive back at the house, there's a Montana State Patrol car parked out front. The trooper steps from the car and asks Lil if her name is Little Thundersky. Am I in trouble? She asks. We found a vehicle that's registered to you. A red Chevy King cab? Summer leans close, whispering. That's what Dennis drives. He doesn't have his own car? Oh, it's totally his. He put it in Mom's name. Everything's in her name, including the house. Lil tells the trooper that the truck is used by her husband, who's away on a trip. A camping trip? The trooper asks. Because the vehicle was left on a dirt road way up the Tom Minor Basin. It's been there a week, at least. Two of the tires are flat. Summer blurts.
What? How did that happen?
A sharp object is how.
Like a broken bottle?
No, the trooper says. Like a knife.
Oh, no, Lil murmurs.
Have you spoken to him lately?
His phone's off. He's in a dead zone, Summer cuts in.
The trooper frowns. I'm afraid we'll have to tow the truck if your husband doesn't show up soon. Meanwhile, you should get somebody to go up there and take some new tires.
Lil says, I'll do it myself first thing tomorrow.
When is he due home, ma'am?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
Is he alone?
I believe so, Lil says.
The trooper glances uneasily at me in Summer, like he's got something else to ask Lil, but doesn't want to do it in front of us. Then he says it anyway. If you don't hear from your husband soon, you should call the sheriff's office. They're in charge of search and rescue.
Thanks for your concern, says Lil, but I'm sure he's all right.
After giving us directions to the location where the red King cab was found, the state trooper drives away. Lil hurries into the house. Summer and I unpack the drift boat. We lower our voices to discuss this unexpected news about Dennis Dickens, her stepfather, my father. None of the possibilities are good.
4.
Everything I know about my dad is what my mother has told me, which isn't much. He was born in South Miami, no brothers or sisters. His parents died while he was away at college in Gainesville, but Mom doesn't seem to know the details. When she and Dad first met, he was the assistant manager of a Foot Locker store in Pembroke Pines. He fitted her for a pair of cross trainers. She said he loved the outdoors like she did. Their first date was a trip to the Corkscrew Swamp looking for otters. In their 7 years together, my father held 13 or 14 different jobs. All the people he worked for liked him, she said, and he never once got fired. He would just quit for no apparent reason, always on a Thursday. Time for a new life direction, he'd announced to my mother as he walked through the door.
What happened now, Dennis?
Oh, the job wasn't so bad, was his usual reply, but I didn't see the right future for me. I felt like I couldn't breathe there anymore. If you don't stop this nonsense, Mom would say angrily, you're going to have some serious breathing problems around here, too. This is strictly her version of the conversation, but I bet it's pretty accurate. The day Dad moved out of the house was also a Thursday. Mom ripped up his goodbye note, and now she regrets it. I didn't know he was serious, she told us much later. After my father left, Mom began referring to him as the serial quitter. I wasn't old enough to realize what was going on, but Belinda did. She's totally on my mother's side, and who can blame her? She says only a loser walks out on his family. Mom was surprised when the first check arrived. Where'd he get all this money? She exclaimed, according to Belinda. The older I got, the more I wondered about my father, where he'd gone and why he'd left. Was he running from us, or searching for something? As Summer and I put away the fly rods and gear, I ask her if it's unusual for a person to get his tires slashed in Montana. I never heard of that happening, she says. Not around here, anyway. Where's the Tom Minor Basin? Way down in Paradise Valley, on the way to Yellowstone Park. A long time ago, it was a hunting ground for the crow. Who lives there now? I ask. Ranchers, rich white people, and bears. By the time Mom calls, I'm already in bed. Have you seen your father yet? She asks. Tomorrow's the big day. Please don't get your hopes up, Billy. Tomorrow's a Thursday. You know his track record on Thursdays. I don't tell her about the visit from the state trooper. Instead, I give her a fishing report. She's proud that I caught a trout on my very first day using a fly rod. Did you spot any eagles, Billy? No, but Lil says several pairs live along the river between here and Big Timber. Some goldens, too. They're even cooler than baldies. I never told you this, Mom says, but your father was the first one to show me an eagle nest. It was up on a power pole in Key Largo. I'm sure it's gone by now. So he's a birder, too? He's got darn good eyes. At least he used to. It sounds like she considers this a nice memory. Sometimes I wish she'd share more of them. How was your day, Mom? Not so wonderful. I'm in hot water with Uber. What did you do? A passenger was being super rude, so I kicked him out of the car. I hope you hit the brakes first. Very funny. Where did this happen? I asked. On top of the Barber Bridge in Vero Beach. Seriously, Mom? He emailed the company to complain. Can you believe that? Yes, I say, I totally can. My sister and I had predicted something like this. I ask Mom what the writer did that was so rude. He asked me out for a drink, and I very politely said no. A few minutes later, I hear him talking to his wife on the phone, pretending to be the perfect husband. Some loud real estate shark from Miami. Supposedly, he was up here looking at properties. Anyway, as soon as he hung up, I stopped the car and told him to get out. Then he had the nerve to call Uber and say I was abandoning him on a dangerous highway. That bridge has a perfectly fine pedestrian lane. Maybe you should try a different kind of job, I say to Mom. Why? Usually I get along with everybody. I'm going to sleep now, okay? When I walk out of the house the next morning, the temperature is in the 40s. I'm wearing every stitch of clothing I brought, plus a down parka belonging to Dennis Dickens. We're bringing a 10-gallon container of gasoline, a backpack with some food, and a couple cans of a chemical pepper spray specially invented to discourage a charging bear. Summer calls shotgun, so I take the back seat. Lil stops at a repair shop in town to buy two new tires mounted on second-hand rims, which we load in the Explorer. The main road south leads through a narrow pass into the world-famous Paradise Valley. Right away, I see how it got its name.
snowy peaks rising on both sides of a wide green plain, the Yellowstone River winding like a silver-blue vein through the middle. If someone had shown me a painting, I wouldn't have believed such a place was real.
Summer and her mom are quiet on the ride, probably because they're worried about my father. I'm worried, too. Even though I barely remember the man, there's still a connection. Eventually, we come to a highway sign for the Tom Minor Basin. Lil turns down a watered dirt road that runs along a bowl-shaped valley framed by slopes of the Gallatin Mountains. Below us is a sprawling patchwork of cattle ranches and farms, half a dozen shades of green. Crossing one high crest, we can see all the way back to Livingston, and seemingly beyond.
The view is 52 miles, Summer reports, on a clear day,
which it is right now, not a cloud in the sky. Soon the dirt road gets narrow and gnarly. Lil says it leads to a campground near a petrified forest, where some of the trees are 50 million years old. She says that's when the Tom Minor Basin was covered with ash and lava from an erupting volcano. I wouldn't mind hiking through an actual petrified forest, but we don't make it to the end of the road. Rounding a bend, we spot my father's red truck, a jumbo pickup with four doors, pulled halfway onto the shoulder. Lil parks behind it. Neither she nor Summer gets out.
You don't see many of those up here, says Lil.
She's pointing at a large prairie rattlesnake. It's the only venomous species in Montana, and normally it's found on, prairies. This one must have traveled to these woods from a dry, craggy hillside across the valley.
The snake is minding its own business, sunning beside one of the flattened tires on Dad's mud-caked pickup.
Summer says, he'll crawl off in a few minutes. Let's wait.
Not me. I hop out for a closer look. The rattler's scales are dullish gray and tan, with a mottled pattern meant to blend with the dusty habitat where it usually lives. It's not as thick around as its Florida cousins, but I count six rattles on the muscular tail.
What on earth are you doing? Summer calls from inside the Explorer. We are not impressed!
Although snakes don't have ear holes, they're able to sense the smallest movements of nearby animals. Rattlers also have tiny pits near their nostrils that help them track warm-blooded prey. When I was researching the solution to my school locker problem, I found a video online that shows a blindfolded rattlesnake striking a balloon filled with hot water. Its aim is dead perfect. The prairie rattler lounging by the truck's deflated tire has realized it's no longer alone. The triangle head rises slowly, exploring for scents with slow flicks of a forked black tongue. I'm crouching safely out of striking range. Lil's voice has an anxious edge.
Billy, get back here, please.
Sensible advice for a normal person, but I don't want to sit around waiting for the snake to crawl away. I want to look inside my father's pickup for clues right now. So I toss a handful of pebbles in the dirt near the rattler, which immediately uncoils, zips across the road, and vanishes down the hill. Lil steps from the SUV, saying,
"Most white folks love to shoot those things. You are definitely your father's son."
The doors on Dad's truck are locked. I wipe the dust from a side window. On the floorboard, I see a Rockies baseball cap, along with a jumble of empty water bottles and soda cans. On the passenger seat sits an open box of shotgun shells.
"Do you have a key?" I ask Lil.
"No, Billy, I don't."
She and Summer get to work using Lil's jack and wrench. After the lug nuts are unscrewed, I lift off the slashed tires. While Summer and Lil begin bolting the new ones on Dad's Chevy, I poke around trying to figure out which direction my father walked. I locate an uphill path leading toward the thick timber. There are no boot prints, though I didn't expect to find any.
Lil says it rained hard here last night. I walk back to the road, where Summer and Lil are still at work. I found a trail. I'm going to get a head start, I say. Lil glances up. Why don't you wait for us, Billy? I won't go far, promise. Summer hands me the backpack and both of the bear spray canisters. Make lots of noise, she advises. Clap, shout, hoot, sing. That way you won't surprise any grizzlies. They'll run off as soon as they hear you. Into the woods I go. It feels stupid to be shouting all by myself.
Whoa, bear! Hey, bear! Don't eat me, bear!
After a few minutes, I sit down on a tree stump to wait. I take out my cell phone to check in with Lil and Summer, but there are no bars, no signal. Any second I expect to hear them coming up the path. The woods seem too quiet, and my nerves start to buzz. Unfortunately, like my mother, I have basically zero patience. I just can't hang around doing nothing. So I get up and move on, confident that Lil and Summer will catch up soon. Except they don't. 5. My sister has this boyfriend. She claims to be madly in love. The kid she's dating is a total tool, but I keep my mouth shut. Belinda is sick of moving from town to town, and this is her way of telling Mom enough's enough. I know Belinda isn't wild about the guy. His name is Dawson, and he goes to a private school, but that's not where he got his high opinion of himself. Anybody who goes out of his way to tell you his haircut cost $50? A serious tool. Belinda knows. I don't need to say a word. She tells Mom she can't possibly imagine her life without charming, handsome Dawson, which is another way of saying she doesn't care what happens to the Eagle Nest here in Fort Pierce. She doesn't want to pack up and move now, not with college on the horizon. She's made a few good friends at school, and she wants to hang with them the rest of the summer, simple as that. The issue hasn't come up yet because Mom's happy right where we are. However, that could change tomorrow if the birds disappear. One time, as a favor to my sister, I actually took Dawson fishing in the Indian River Lagoon. He caught a little crevalle that magically grew to 10 pounds when he retold the story. The best part was I had to unhook his fish because Dawson wouldn't touch it. He wouldn't bait his own hook either. He said he didn't want the shrimp to bite him. Shrimp don't bite, I pointed out. Everything bites, Dawson declared. What made me think of him now is that I'm hiking through a place where a person could get seriously bitten by something way bigger than a shrimp, something with actual teeth. Dawson would be wetting his pants. The trail winds back and forth before forking into twin paths. I choose the one that veers right, hoping that Summer Chasing Hawks and Little Thundersky can track me. The ground is too hard-packed to leave any footprints, so I place a dime in the middle of the path to show them which way I went. Hiking the swamps of the Everglades is completely different from hiking the high timber country of the Rockies. For one thing, Montana bears grow much larger than Florida bears. When I said I wanted to see a grizzly, I meant from a safe distance, not nose to nose in the deep woods. That's why I'm holding a can of pepper spray in each hand and shouting,
"Whoa, bear! Hey, bear! Don't eat me, bear!"
A porcupine the size of a tumbleweed scuffles past, slow enough for me to snap a picture with my phone. Farther down the trail, I spot a white-tailed deer, a buck with a major rack of antlers. He bolts from sight before I can get a photo. I hear him crashing through the trees. Maybe the noise will scare off the bears, or maybe the bears are used to nervous deer. I'm a little nervous, too, though not really scared. More humans get chomped by gators and sharks in Florida than attacked by wild bears in Montana. I looked it up on the internet last night while I was lying in bed listening to a train rumble through town. Statistically, you're 100 times safer hiking through grizzly country than driving a car to the supermarket. That's what I keep reminding myself. After a while, I emerge from the tree line and enter a rocky meadow spangled with wildflowers, yellow, purple, crimson, and white. The magpies start to yap, and I figure they're annoyed by my shouts interrupting their sleepy afternoon.
Whoa, bear! Hey, bear! Don't eat me, bear!
Between chants, I hear an odd noise, a high-pitched hum, somewhere in the sky. The sun is bright, and of course I forgot my shades, so I set down both cans of bear spray and use my hands to block the glare. The humming grows louder and louder until it sounds more like a mechanical buzz. Leaning back, I spot something hovering no more than 50 feet in the air, straight above my head. A remote-controlled drone. I wave both arms.
Hey, Dad! It's me! Billy!
The drone draws closer. It's a gray quadcopter, 4 propellers and a red stripe on the bottom. I can see the shiny black eye of the camera lens. I keep waving.
It's okay! You can come out!
I'm not sure how long it's been since Mom sent any photos of me to my father, but I've grown about 3 inches in the last year. I hope he recognizes me on the video feed. Maybe he can read my lips, since most drones don't come with microphones. Unless it's a super high-tech military spy drone.
Yo, Dad! Can you hear me?
I yell. The quadcopter flutters for a moment, spins slowly, then begins rising.
Wait! Wait!
It keeps going up, 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 until I can barely hear the motor. Still, I keep waving like a fool.
Wait! It's only me!
I holler at the shrinking speck.
Billy Dickens!
But the drone speeds away above the rocky field, heading for distant treetops. I chase after it until I enter a stretch of timber so dense that I can't see any blue patches of sky. There's no trail to follow, so I'm forced to slow down and thread my way through the tree trunks. Not far ahead, I hear something make a deep-throated noise. It sounds large and not particularly human. I fumble to pull out the bear spray, a major swing and a miss. I've left both canisters back in the meadow. All I can do now is shout,
"Whoa, bear! Hey, bear! Don't eat me, bear!"
Slowly, I begin backing away. If you run from a grizzly, then it thinks you're dinner. At least that's what it said online. But actually, who else but the bear could possibly know what it's thinking? Exiting the forest in reverse seems to take forever. Finally, I feel the sun on my neck, and once again, I'm out in the exposed meadow. Hurriedly, I retrace my steps to where I dropped the bear spray, hunker down next to the canisters, and unzip the backpack. Inside are a pair of binoculars and 4 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, one of which I stuff in my mouth and wash down with a bottle of water. I also devour an apple and a power bar that tastes like a roof shingle. Clouds are skidding in from the northwest, and the temperature is diving. There's still no sign of summer in Lil. I lie down to wait using the backpack as a pillow. Overhead, shiny black crows circle in odd silence. I can't stop wondering what my father's doing way out here and why he hasn't come out of the woods to meet me. I also wonder if any hungry bears have picked up the tasty aroma of my PBJ. A normal person could never fall asleep in such a sketchy situation, but that's what I do. Doze off, clutching a can of bear spray in each fist. If Mom saw me now, she'd have a nervous breakdown. The crows begin to caw excitedly, and that's what wakes me up. Or maybe it's the humming. I open my eyes and see the gray quadcopter staring down at me. This time, I don't bother to wave. A small object drops from the craft and lands near my head. It's a small round rock wrapped in white paper. Still flat on my back, I put down the bear spray and read the message on the paper. It's written in blue ballpoint ink, the letters small and extremely neat. Billy, please get away from here as fast as you can. I'll explain everything later, when I see you. Love, Dad. P.S. I apologize for all the lost years. Be sure to tell your sister, too. I glare up at the camera, spread my arms, and shout,
Are you kidding me?
The drone spins around and flies off. Watching it fade into a pale dot, I realize my father could be hiding with the remote control just about anywhere in this wild countryside. There's no point trying to find him, because he obviously doesn't want to interact. A mix of sadness and anger tells me not to move, to just lie here in the middle of the meadow until the man feels guilty enough to show his face. I assume the drone is still airborne, aiming its faraway eyeball at me. The minutes drip by. I remain outstretched and motionless. From the sky, it must look like I'm unconscious, maybe even dead. I wouldn't be surprised to attract some hungry buzzards. Come on, Dad, I mutter. Do something. I strain to listen for footsteps or the call of a man's voice, but there's nothing to be heard except for those obnoxious crows. Once again, I feel seriously restless. So much for the sunny summer day. A light, cool rain has begun to fall, and bugs are chewing my ankles. I brush something off of my cheek, but now it's clinging to my hand. A lanky brown spider. That's it. I'm done. I flick the spider into the wildflowers, grab the backpack, and stand up. Dad's lame note is folded in my pocket where I'd put it. I think about that open box of ammunition on the front seat of his pickup. What does he need a gun to protect himself from? Bears? Wolves? Or something else? We might never end up being friends, but I intend to find out what's going on. The wind howls, and it's getting colder by the minute. My plan is to hike back toward the road where the truck and the SUV are parked and wait for Lil and Summer to return. Obviously, they took the other path where the trail forked. While crossing the meadow, I sense I'm being watched, though not from the air. Carefully, I step around an impressive mound of fresh animal poop. Seriously, it would take the world's biggest dog a year to make a pile so huge. The poop is full of choke cherries, the favorite snack of a certain hump-shouldered mega predator. The tree line is only 100 yards away, so I jog to the place where I first came out, or where I thought I came out. But where's that trail? Usually the compass in my head is reliable, but not today. There are no easy landmarks to use for direction. The trees, mostly lodgepole pines, all look about the same size. As I search back and forth for the slim opening into the forest, I feel a pair of eyes locked on me. My hands tremble as I grope through the backpack for the binoculars. They're not super fancy, just your basic 7x35, but they'll work fine at this distance. Standing erect on the far edge of the meadow is something tall and cinnamon-colored. It takes me a moment to dial in the focus. Now I can see her perfectly, watching me, watching her. I know it's a she because two chubby cubs are rolling around in the wildflowers nearby. Grizz, is what I whisper to myself. Wow. I don't realize I'm inching backward until I trip over a rotten log and end up on my butt. I scramble to my feet and snatch up the fallen binoculars. Breathlessly, I scan the border of the clearing, but the mother bear's not there anymore. If she ever really was. I can't rule out the possibility that I'm imagining things. Somehow I find my way to the main dirt road. It still feels like there's a jackhammer in my chest. The first thing I notice after leaving the forest is that the rain has stopped. The second thing I notice is this. My father's red pickup truck is gone.
"What's his problem?"
I say aloud, to nobody. Who drives off and leaves his son alone in the middle of grizzly country? P.S. I apologize for all the lost years. Yeah, Dad. Whatever. The third thing I notice, the one that worries me the most, Lil's blue explorer is gone, too. I've never hitchhiked before, but I assume there's no point sticking out your thumb when there aren't any cars in sight. Basically, I'm hiking without the hitching. A night in the Tom Minor Basin with no tent or sleeping bag isn't an ideal option. I don't even have any matches for starting a campfire. So I move at a fast clip down the dirt road. The highway leading back to Livingston is miles away. I can see it from here, a gray ribbon snaking through the foothills. At this point, I'm mad at almost everybody. My father, Lil, Summer, but especially myself. Coming all the way to Montana, thinking Dad would be happy to see me, was foolish. I should have listened to my mother. Right now she'd be saying, "Hydrate yourself, Billy, hydrate." So I take a water break, and that's when I hear a car engine. Someone is speeding up the hill, opposite the way I'm going, but I don't care. A ride's a ride. A pale green pickup rounds the bend, churning dust. I thrust out one arm, thumb extended. The driver slows to a stop. It's a ranger with the U.S. Forest Service. He says somebody phoned in a report of a gunshot in an area where deer poaching has been a problem. "I can't take you with me," he says, "but I'll give you a lift on the way back if nobody else comes by before then. You got a phone?" "No bars," I say. "Keep walking and you'll get a signal." I didn't hear any shots. "You wouldn't if you were standing upwind. It's blowing 25, maybe 30 miles an hour out there," he says. "Stay on the road, son, okay? No shortcuts. I'll keep an eye out for you on the way down." So at least I won't be stuck way out here until morning, which is a relief. A little while later, I hear another engine, also speeding uphill. The blue explorer comes around the bend. This ought to be interesting. Little Thunder Sky slams on the brakes as soon as she spots me. Summer Chasing Hawks is in the passenger seat wearing a worried expression. "Nice of you guys to come back," I say. Summer leans her head out the window.
"Come back where? We've been looking all over for you."
So, it turns out the trail I followed out of the woods wasn't the same one I followed in. That's why I didn't see Dad's pickup or Lil's SUV when I reached the road. I was in the wrong place.
"Did you find Dennis?" Lil asks.
"Nope. He sent his stupid drone," I say. A touching father-son moment. Lil sighs.
"Hop in, Billy."
She makes a three-point turn, aiming us back toward the highway. "Your father's got more than a cell," she tells me. "He's got a full-on satellite phone." "That's handy."
"It means he can contact us from basically anywhere, anytime he wants," Summer explains, "even from a dead zone."
"Isn't science amazing?" I say.
"He called Mom totally freaked because he spotted you with the drone. He asked what the heck you were doing out in the bear meadow. She told him we drove up to fix the flat tires on his truck."
Lil takes over the story.
"I explained that you came all this way because you want to see him. He kept saying he wasn't allowed to leave his surveillance post.
He said he couldn't come out of the woods because he's working undercover.
That makes no sense, I say. Why would the government be doing a secret mission out here in the middle of nowhere? What are they spying on? Terrorist chipmunks?
Summer's eyes narrow. You think he's lying?
Something's weird about his story is all I'm saying. He's working undercover in the middle of a forest? What, disguised as a pine cone?
Lil looks perplexed.
I don't know what's going on, but his tires definitely got slashed.
That doesn't mean he's on a dangerous government assignment, I say. It just means he pissed somebody off.
I tell Lil about my encounter with the ranger. She doesn't seem concerned by the report of gunfire in the area.
Lots of people poach deer out of season, she says with a shrug. We pass Dad's empty pickup, parked in the same place we found it. Lil doesn't bother to slow down. What would be the point? He's not coming out of the woods.
I take out 2 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and hand them across the seat.
Summer grabs one, but Lil isn't hungry.
Summer and I tried to find you, she says. We must have taken a different path.
You didn't see my dime?
Summer spins and fixes me with a scalding look.
First of all, Mom and I were practically running trying to catch up. Second, you never told us to look for a dime. And third, that's the best you could do for a clue? The smallest coin they make?
Lil waves a hand.
Just tell us what happened out there, Billy.
Dad sent me a note taped to a rock. The drone delivered it.
A note? Summer says. What did it say?
Basically, not much.
Lil is plainly irritated with my father. She apologizes to me about 16 times.
You came all the way from Florida.
I really wanted this to work out.
It wasn't a wasted trip. I'm pretty sure I saw Mama Grizzly.
No way! Summer exclaims.
With 2 cubs, I swear.
Thinking about the bears makes me smile. Thinking about my father doesn't.
6. The next morning, Lil and Summer announce we're going to Yellowstone National Park. I guess they feel bad about my father snubbing me, and they think a road trip would be a fun distraction. Southbound on the highway, I'm doing okay until we pass the Tom Minor Basin, where I find myself scanning the sky for the sparkle of a drone, and thinking, what's your story, Dad? In the town of Gardner, Lil gasses up the Explorer while Summer and I grab 3 subs for lunch. At the park entrance, there's a line of cars and RVs, which turns out to be a preview of the whole day. This time of year, the Yellowstone experience is basically a traffic jam with incredible scenery. The park fills with thousands of tourists determined to see actual wildlife, which is fine. I get that. But too many of these pilgrims get crazed, rushing up to the animals and snapping pictures so they can show everybody back home. The bigger the critter, the bigger the traffic mess. Bear jams are the worst. Summer fills me in on the scoring. Number 1 on the tourist hit the brakes list are grizzlies, then black bears, wolves, moose, bison, elk, antelope, and deer, in that order. But any 4-legged creature, large or small, draws a crowd. Our first traffic jam is caused by a gopher, of all things. A van with a Florida license plate skids to a halt when the driver spies one of the chubby rodents munching grass by the edge of the road. Gophers are the biological opposite of an endangered species. There are jillions of them out west, digging tunnels and holes in yards, pastures, and hayfields. Stopping to photograph a gopher in Yellowstone is like stopping in downtown Miami to take a picture of a rat. Yet now, unbelievably, throngs of people are streaming from their cars to surround one of these bewildered rodents. So we sit in the long line of traffic, waiting and waiting.
Oh, this is nothing, Lil says. It's not a terrible place to be stuck. The brisk mountain air smells like Christmas trees. Eventually, the rock star gopher gets bored and crawls down a hole. The cars and RVs begin rolling onward again. The next traffic jam is what Summer calls a tourist IQ test. A group of buffalo is grazing in a vast field. The vehicles ahead of us aren't moving because a woman in flip-flops has hopped from a camper and is now striding toward the largest, gnarliest-looking bull in the herd. Once you see something like this in person, you'll never need to look up the word moron in the dictionary. Signs are posted all over the park warning visitors not to approach the wild animals because they are, wild. Still, every summer a startling number of nitwits decide it would be cool to get a selfie with an American bison, a creature that has no sense of humor and weighs as much as a Toyota sedan. Sometimes these photo adventures end badly, with tourists getting gored, which is something I don't want to witness with my own eyes. Neither does Lil. She jumps out of the SUV and starts hollering for the woman in flip-flops to come back. Other motorists are yelling at her, too.
Stop! Stop!
Stay away from that thing! Are you crazy? Leave him alone!
The woman ignores the uproar and approaches the shaggy, horned giant. Buffalo have poor eyesight, one reason they nearly went extinct back in the 1800s. White settlers shot them by the thousands, sometimes out of hunger, but often just for cruel fun, even firing from passing trains. The buffalo didn't run away because they couldn't see what was killing them. The government finally outlawed the slaughter, and the bison herd in Yellowstone gradually made an amazing comeback. Yet, because the animals are now protected from hunting, they've got basically zero fear of humans. Which doesn't mean they actually like us. They just tolerate us. And barely. The woman in flip-flops starts clicking pictures of herself in front of the buffalo, which turns its boulder-sized head and paws a hoof on the ground. This is a signal that the bull is getting annoyed. The woman might think the animal is dull-witted and slow, but it could chase her down and trample her in like 5 seconds flat. Lil keeps yelling, though the other onlookers have grown quiet, as if waiting for something awful to happen. Several of them are now shooting videos of their own. The wayward tourist appears to be speaking to the bull buffalo as if it were a stray dog. Maybe she's coaching it on how to pose for her photos. All I know is that the humongous old bison looks like it's had enough. Me too. I slide out of Lil's Explorer and start running across the field toward the bozo and flip-flops. The woman gets mad when she sees me coming.
Get out of here! You're gonna ruin my selfies! She cries.
The people up on the road think I've lost my mind. They're shouting at me, too, and even in the clamor I can make out Summer's voice. But I keep on running, closer and closer, until I feel the cold stare of buffalo eyeballs. The animal pivots from the clueless tourist to confront a new, rude intruder. Me. By the time I stop, I'm near enough to smell the bison's nappy coat and feel its steamy heat. Gnats and flies are buzzing around its somber face.
What are you doing?
Shrieks the woman in flip-flops. Saving your life, I say.
Leave me alone!
The buffalo bobs its head and snorts. You don't need a zoology degree to know what's coming next. I grab the angry numbskull around the waist and start pulling her away. She accidentally drops her phone, and now she's trying to wriggle free so she can dash back and get it. No matter how fiercely she struggles, I hang on. Over my shoulder, I watch the buffalo unhappily watching us. It's pawing the ground again, deciding what to do. The woman continues squawking, squirming, calling me names, but I'm stronger than she is. I don't let go until we're safely back on the road. Instead of thanking me, she threatens to have me arrested. I point across the open plain to where the bull buffalo is now stomping her precious phone to pieces. Lady, that's what was going to happen to you, I say. Maybe worse. Her red-faced husband leads her to their RV, and off they go. I get back in the Explorer expecting a lecture, but all Lil says is, well done. Summer is grinning. Billy, has anyone ever told you that you're different? We don't see any bears, moose, or wolves, but it's still an excellent road trip. Lil and Summer take me to some mind-bending waterfalls in the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. We follow a zigzag walkway to a viewing platform where I stand half-hypnotized by the roar and rumble in the gorge below. The mist from the crashing waters feels cool on my cheeks. Signs warn visitors not to climb over the rails, which seems obvious because you could easily slip from the rocks and fall hundreds of feet into the raging currents. Summer says it's happened before. Some people forget to pack their brains when they go on vacation. There's also a sign saying no drones are allowed in the park. I can't help wondering if my father's so-called surveillance job ever takes him this far up the river. On the ride back to Livingston, I pretend to nap until we're past the Tom Minor Basin. Once we reach town, Lil makes a late lunch, early dinner stop at Mark's In-N-Out, where I destroy two cheeseburgers and a small mountain of fries. Mom would not approve. I didn't call her last night because I didn't want to talk about what had happened with my father. Can we reach him on the satellite phone? I ask Lil. He leaves it off because he doesn't want to drain the battery. But I could still leave a message, right? If you want to, Billy. Summer says, leave him a message, definitely. Back at the house, Lil gives me the number of my dad's satellite phone, which has so many numerals it would be hard to remember. I go into the bedroom to make the call, which doesn't take long. There's no answer on the other end. When the voice prompt beeps, I say what I have to say. It's a brief message. The next number I dial is Mom's. Nice of you to check in, she says sarcastically. Please tell me you've heard from your father. Sort of. I describe the odd encounter with Dad's quadcopter, omitting the part about the note he dropped by remote control. Still, she's ticked off. He didn't even walk out of the woods to see you? Lil and Summer couldn't believe it either. I'm gonna call that jackass and give him a piece of my mind. It's all good, Mom. I got to see a grizzly bear with two cubs.
From way far away, I hope.
Oh, at least a mile, I lie, because I don't want her to worry. Any eagles? She asks. Not today, but I'll text you video of some epic waterfalls.
You okay?
I'm fine, Mom, just fine.
I'm sorry about what happened with your dad. I don't know what's going on in his head. Maybe I never did.
Afterward, I slip out the back door alone. Satan the dog trails me down to the river. A dark wedge of cloud looms over town. The wind is kicking and the temperature is chilly. It doesn't look or feel much like summer. I sit on a big, flat rock. The Labrador half of the dog wants to leap in the water, but the greyhound half is nervous about the weather. A coal train whistles, and I close my eyes. Satan pokes his soft nose against my hands. Cold raindrops pepper my arms. The storm is charging down the Yellowstone through Paradise Valley. The worst of it is 9 miles away. I calculate the distance by counting the seconds between the lightning flashes and thunderclaps. If my father is still holed up in the Tom Minor Basin, he's soaked to the skin. I hope he's got a waterproof case for that drone. At Lil's house, I found a program for last year's Livingston Rodeo,
listing all the cowboys. Their names were absolutely perfect. Shane, Wyatt, Josh, Heath, Logan, Morgan, Garrett, Thor, Tudor, Pistol, two Coles, and three Codys. From the day they were born, these guys were destined to grow up and wrestle steers or ride wild bulls. It was a done deal. Mine isn't a bad name for a cowboy, although the rodeo announcer would probably call me Billy the Kid. If I lived here, I'd pick something different. Trace would be a good one. Or maybe Dusty. That's even better.
Now riding Spleen Crusher, the baddest bull between here and the Dakotas is Dangerous Dusty Dickens. Let's give him a big old Montana welcome.
It's pouring so hard that I'm shivering. I feel sorry for the dog. There's another white burst of lightning, and this time I only reach the count of two before thunder rocks the hills. That's way too close. Even a cowboy called Dangerous would scramble to get out of a storm like this, but for some reason, I stay where I am, sitting on the flat rock by the river. My arms are wrapped around the drenched dog. When I whisper to him, I call him Sparky, his original name, instead of Satan, the shoe-eater. Another lightning bolt makes both of us flinch, and the thunder breaks instantly. Glancing at the sky, I see an enormous brown bird tracing graceful circles over the winding river. It's twice as big as an osprey, bigger than a buzzard, maybe even bigger than a baldy. From the tip of one wing to the other must be 7 feet. Raindrops are stinging my face, but I can't take my eyes off the bird. The next time it sails over me, I notice bushy feathers on its legs, all the way down to the talons. That leg plumage is the clincher, the key clue, and another piece of information most normal kids wouldn't know. The huge bird that's riding the gusts of the river storm is a golden eagle. Maybe that's why I didn't move from the rock. Part of me must have sensed that I'd miss something magical if I ran for cover. Suddenly, a zigzag bolt zaps a cottonwood tree on the bank across the water. The crash of the thunderclap is ear-splitting. I flatten myself, shielding the miserable dog. The surface of the rock is wet and slick. When I raise my head to peek at the sky, the eagle is gone. Soon, the thunder fades, the rain quits, and the clouds roll on. The dog rises and shakes hard, trying to dry off. I stand too, craning my neck to see where the golden went. It's hard to believe it was really up there, soaring between the lightning bolts, but it was. I'm almost positive. Here's the message I left on my father's satellite phone. Hey, it's Billy. Your son? I came a really long way to see you. What's the problem? He still hasn't called back. After so long without contact, I shouldn't be surprised that he's dodging me. We used to have thousands of horses, Summer is saying. Not us personally, but the Crow as a tribe. We were famous for our horses. Still are, says Lil. Summer grabs a cookie from a jar. There's a cool rodeo show at the Crow Fair, but it's not the same as running herds of wild mustangs across the plains. I've been so fixated on finding my father that I haven't spent much time asking his new family about their lives, their stories. How often do you get a chance to hang with people named Little Thundersky and Summer Chasing Hawks? Lil says, leave the past upriver. That's what my great-grandfather used to say, but it's hard to do. Summer looks over at me. Some of the family wasn't too happy when Mom hooked up with your dad. They let us know, too. Dennis is solid, Lil cuts in. A good man. I keep my mouth shut, but what I want to say is, good guys don't hide from their kids.
Summer tells Lil about the golden eagle I saw down by the river. Lil smiles and says, "Oh, I know that bird." "Why was he flying around in that terrible weather?" I asked.
"Because it's smarter than sitting up in a tall tree during an electric storm."
She asks how I want to spend tomorrow, my last day in Montana. I tell her I want to go back to the Tom Minor Basin. She shakes her head and says that's not a great idea.
"I wouldn't know where to start looking," she says. "He could be anywhere."
Later, when I'm lying in bed, listening to my playlist, Summer enters the room, followed by the dog and the crusty old tabby. "Mom and I came up with a name for you," she says. I pull out my earbuds.
"A crow name?"
"Well, it's not official or anything. More like honorary."
"All right. Let's hear it."
"Big Stick." I'm wondering if the name means what it sounds like it means. My face must be turning red, because Summer laughs and says, "Relax, it's a river thing. When a fishing guide takes out a new sport who turns out to be super good with a fly rod, the real deal, they call him a big stick."
"But I'm just learning how."
"It's not all about the fishing. The name is about who you are as a person."
"So it's a compliment?" I say.
Yeah.
"Then thanks."
"You're welcome, Billy Big Stick."
I guess it's better than Snake Boy.
"I've got a question," I say to Summer, "and don't get mad, but do you really sign those checks my mother gets every month?" "I wouldn't make up something like that."
I still can't get my head around it. "So you forged Dad's signature?"
"He's the one that taught me how," she says. "It's not really forgery if it's his idea."
"But why?"
"Because somebody's got to pay the bills when he's not here, and Mom's busy most of the time. So he put me in charge of the checkbook. Dennis isn't exactly a math whiz, and he's also kind of scattered. He doesn't always remember when the 10th of the month rolls around, but I do. He knows I'll never forget to send that money to Florida, and that's the only check he ever asks about. He is a good person, Billy."
"Let's not take a vote," I mutter.
Summer gets why I feel the way I do about my dad. She's not making excuses for him. "He's got some major explaining to do," she says. "Let's go back to Tom Minor." "Billy, it's like looking for a microscopic needle in a supergiant haystack. A needle that doesn't want to be found." The next morning, we head the opposite direction of where I wanted to go. We get off the interstate at Springdale and put Lil's boat in the Yellowstone, which seems slower and wider here. There's a faint drizzle with low clouds, and the river's surface is the color of flattened tin. Lil rows, Summer reads her book, and I sit in the bow casting a fly rod. Once I find the right rhythm, my technique improves. In only a couple hours, I land 7 rainbow trout and 3 cutthroats. Lil is chuckling when she nets the biggest fish.
"I'd say Billy Big Stick is living up to his name."
From the back of the boat comes Summer's voice. "Ha! Beginner's luck!" By noon, the sun is shining bright. Lil anchors under the boughs of a big, lush cottonwood. Rising on the opposite bank is a rock cliff honeycombed with holes that are filled with swallow nests, the sleek birds swarming like moths. For lunch, Lil brought pasta salad and turkey wraps. Summer baked some oatmeal raisin cookies, and I eat way more than I should. She and I swap seats so she can fish the next stretch of river while I zone out in the back of the boat. I'm not surprised to see how well she casts, and it's a pretty thing to watch. Her first catch is a 19-inch brown trout that fights like a pit bull. Once the fish is shining in the net, Summer blows it a kiss before Lil sets it free. We float beneath a tall, craggy tree that has a bald eagle nest at the top. I take like 10 pictures, which I text to Mom, I don't expect a response right away. Today's an Uber day, and she doesn't check her messages while she's driving. Which is good. Mom does okay when she can focus.
Did you tell her what happened when you went to find